5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
TV Zone Plus, hosted by Paul Mount and Scott Holmes.
Hello, Scott.
Hello, Paul.
Hello, Elaine.
Hello, Paul.
It's the TV Zone Plus podcast on location at a remote secret place in South Wales where we are filming today, aren't we, boys and girls?
We are.
Yes, we are indeed.
We're filming a murder reconstruction thing for NBC in America, and we've got our masks on. We've done some filming already, walking about, sitting in a bar. It's proper glamorous stuff.
Yeah, we are extras.
Exterminate the extras. You're having a good time today? This is Elaine's first go, isn't it?
It is mine, yes.
Are you enjoying it so far?
I am. It's very fun. It's different. It's nice to be out and about.
It's nice to be out the house.
It is.
With approval from
everybody. Yeah, we've had our tests, haven't
we? Yeah. We are officially COVID-free, so if any of our fans want to snog us, they can, and they won't catch anything.
I'm married. Scott.
Yeah, and I don't mean you, Mr. Berridge. I know what you're like. Ooh, so anyway, we thought we'd just do this little bit of extra stuff. It's the glamour is amazing. There's cameras everywhere, lights,
coffees.
Coffees.
We've all got big individual trailers, massive great big trailers full of TVs and the bar. I've emptied the bar. What? Oh,
where
sorry. It's a dream I had. So we just thought we'd say hello before we get into the show proper. What are we talking about on this particular show, Scott?
We're going to be having a chat at the fantastic WandaVision.
WandaVision.
We've seen the first two episodes.
Yeah.
We're also going to be adding a little natter about The Stand.
Yes.
Which is a Stephen King novel that's been adapted into a TV series. It was a film, I think, back in the 90s.
I think it was a miniseries back in the 90s.
It's
been done on TV already as a miniseries.
We're going to be reviewing the first 5 episodes of that. We might actually have the third WandaVision, actually. By the time we get to record,
because we're recording on Monday the...
Today is Monday the 17th.
17th. 18th?
And then we'll probably be recording on Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah, something like that.
And possibly we'll be recording in person.
Yeah.
Not over the old Zoom, yeah, Skype situation.
We have a slight loophole in the lockdown restrictions, which may enable me to travel, so hopefully we can do something live. We're also going to be talking about Wonder Woman 1984
which we didn't do last time
because we ran out of time.
We did about two hours on the last episode, which I hope you all enjoyed. Yeah. So we're going to be doing about half an hour probably talking about Wonder Woman 84.
Less than Wonder Woman.
And the sort of marvel that it is.
If only it was a marvel. So there we are. So we are just waiting for our cues to go back on set. A lot going on at the moment.
As you can hear in the background.
Yeah, you can hear lots of buzz and lots of chat. There's one of the directors just going out through the door. There's the makeup lady. It's all exciting stuff.
Yeah, now you're just describing what you're looking at.
I know. And there's lots of people wearing masks. Anyway, so that's our introduction to episode 79 of
So
TV
this is
Zone Plus.
Paul and Scott on location. Back to Paul and Scott in the studio.
Thank you very much, Paul and Scott on location. Then back to us at the studio. How are you doing, Paul?
Can I just say studio?
Ah.
Studio.
You're in the big studio.
Right. Come on.
No, this is a studio.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it fully soundproofed?
Yes.
Bloody. I never knew that. I thought it was your kitchen table.
Yes.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Paul. Happy New Year to every one of our fabulous listeners.
Is this the first one we've done this year or the second one?
I believe it's the second one.
We're back recording again, a little bit later than normal, because we've been quite busy.
But magically, we are doing it in person.
I know we're doing it because even though we're strictly speaking on lockdown, we have special exemptions which allow me to travel to the studio with Scott to record live and in person, which is much the best way to do it.
We're all also been tested.
We've been tested three
multiple times.
I've had things shoved up me three times.
Okay.
That's a whole other thing. Plus, I've been tested for COVID three times, and as of certainly last Saturday, I'm completely disease-free.
We got negative.
We got negative.
Negatives are usually a bad thing, but in this case, it's a good thing.
So, how come this happened as well? How come we got these?
Well, my dear, we are actors.
We are. We've been theatralizing.
We've been doing a little bit of filming for our good friends at Monster Studios for a project.
Films.
We'll hopefully be able to tell you when it will come on TV.
It's been quite nice because January's usually a shit month, isn't it? So Christmas, bearing in mind that Christmas was fairly shit. And January and February tend to be very drab. But I'm actually quite enjoying January this year. It's been quite nice. There's been some things to do.
It's been eventful.
It's been eventful.
And it's probably the most eventful month we've had within the past year.
It's just been nice. It just reminds me.
It's the best January of this year.
It's the best January I've had this year, for sure. But no, it just reminds you how nice it is to be doing stuff again when you're stuck indoors. Much as you can entertain yourself, it is nice to do a few pieces. So as Young Scott said, we had a little filming gig with Monster Films for quite a big scale production. Normally the things we do are quite small scale little things, but this was NBC Studios, as I mentioned in the intro, for America. I think it's a two or three district. They weren't sure that it was two or three. Such a two-part documentary reconstruction crime thing. The sort of things that we've done before, but on a bigger scale because it's NBC in America, which we're hoping will lead to more of the same.
Hopefully. Yeah.
So we had, I had 5 or 6 days on that. You had three, I think?
Three, yeah.
So it's been good fun to be out and about seeing people. But it's the social things that were quite weird. Remembering the things you can't do. You can't go shake hands with people. You've got to stay tuned.
Constantly being told, stand back, get back.
Put your mask on when you're not
filming. Mask on when we're about to film, masks off.
But it was just nice to be able to do stuff again.
It was.
And also, a couple of weeks ago, I, as many of you may have seen, did a little Zoom interview with Sylvester McCoy, which is now available on the Starbase YouTube channel to promote his new film, The Owners, which is coming out next month. Quite odd, really, because he's not my favourite Doctor Who by any stretch of the imagination. But he's just a nice bloke. Very nice chap to talk to.
He seemed very nice. I have obviously watched your
several times, I hope.
Several minutes.
Naturally.
Yeah.
Naturally.
Very interesting to hear. He seemed like a very, very genuine, nice man. And you obviously did a very good job as the interviewer.
Thank you. It was quite funny at the beginning, the bit which I think was obviously edited by Starburst HQ. And stuff. Because if you've seen it in my office space, I've got this sort of cardboard cut that thing of the TARDIS. He looked at it and said, "Oh, that Wonder Works, John. You've stolen it, you bastard." So he was quite sort of chatty. He said he wanted it back, and later on I said, "I'm afraid you can't have it. I'm busy. Yeah? I'm travelling back to the 1950s when it wasn't such a mad world." But no, it's just nice to do those things. It just reminds you that because before Christmas I was thinking, "Oh, I've done that. That's over. The world's grown to a halt," but there are still things to be done.
But no matter how famous we get or how many famous people we interview, we still know our roots. TV Zone Plus podcast.
Yes.
This is where we belong, and we're still going to give you great content.
We can never escape.
Every roughly fortnight, you know.
Yeah.
We're not getting paid for this, so who says we have to do it every fortnight?
We do.
Who says? Are you not?
No, I'm not getting paid for either. That's right. No, we're not getting paid for this, Scott. That's right.
Yeah.
No, we do this for the love of...
Call me Mr. Gullible.
We do this for the love of... I've always been. We do this for the love of the genre and because we like the sound of our own voices.
Yes. Yeah, because I have a lovely dulcet tone. And you're going to listen to my lovely dulcet tone with some stuff that we're going to be talking about today.
Scott, I knew we did give a hint of that.
We did.
But I think there's even more now.
Well, we're going to do a little bit of news. We have the trailer drop of Kong versus Godzilla. This trailer was there to marvel at in some form. We're also going to be talking about the new Doctor Who Blu-ray. I believe this is where Sylvester McCoy really comes back
it's Doctor. Sylvester McCoy mensch.
Yeah. I think,
be interesting.
We also have, I don't know anything about this, and this has been thrown in there without my knowledge, Game of Thrones animation.
Yeah, there's talk of a Game of Thrones animated series, which apparently is in production already, but I'll look up about that before we get to it.
We're also going to be talking about our long-awaited Wonder Woman 1984 review.
Now you've all seen it, hopefully, because it's available on various streaming services now. You can have a look at that one, and you've probably all formed your own opinions. And we got some Four TV reviews.
Four TV reviews.
This is crazy talk.
It's generous. It's very generous. But first of all, you can marvel at our TV review of WandaVision. I know. Yeah. But I did it again, and it worked because I can hear people laughing right now. John Emerson's got my back, I'm sure. James Berridge, he's probably laughing his way all the way home.
Yeah, he's nuts.
You know, Scott D's probably not laughing because he's probably just rolling his eyes at
you. Just name all our listeners.
David Geldof. That's four of them so far.
Oh, Carol listens to it.
Well. Yeah. Oh, yeah, let's include spouses, then.
Pets.
We're also going to be talking about Stephen King's The Stand.
The Stand.
Which is a TV version of a Stephen King novel. I believe it's had a film out previously hasn't it?
Many TVs back in the 90s. This is very timely. It's an apocalyptic end of the world series about a killer virus, which is just the sort of thing you want to be watching.
Yeah, exactly. We're also going to be discussing Star Trek Lower Decks, the animated comedy Star Trek show.
Not so much discussing it, dismissing it.
Yeah, I think that's probably all we need to say about that. We just cut that out.
We watched two episodes. I struggled through one. That's about that.
Then we've had letters. It's letters. It's time to listen to some letters at that point. And then, our final TV review, the fourth one of the show, we're going to be talking about Camp Cretaceous Season 2.
That's
a bit harsh.
That's Jurassic World rather than some sort of RuPaul's Drag Act type thing.
Oh, yeah, Camp. So Jurassic World.
See what I did there?
Although it doesn't actually say Jurassic World on the show, does it? I think it's just called Camp Cretaceous 2. We'll be discussing that, whether it says Jurassic World or not.
We call it Season 2, but let's face it, it's not really, is it?
It's a continuation.
It's the second half of the first season, but they split it in two and call it Season 2. There's no way they could have made these episodes. When did the first season come out? September, October, something like that?
Something like that. It seems like it's done that Christmas break, bringing the second half.
16 episodes, which seems to be one of the settings for episode one, so obviously, which is fine.
And then we'll have, unfortunately, one of bits where we almost got away with none.
Yeah.
But we do have one. And then we'll finish off with any other businesses.
It's a pretty packed show.
It is a pretty packed show.
So I think we should get on with it and just head straight down to that cinema. No cinemas anyway. Which is bizarre. I don't know when they're going to open again. We've just been announced in Wales, we've got another 3-week lockdown.
Yeah.
I think England is much the same, so cinema is very much a thing of the past. Wonder Woman 1984, though, came out a couple of weeks ago. Came out just.
We'll do the news after Wonder Woman.
We'll do the news after. Yeah.
Wonder Woman 1984,
which came out in America for Christmas, I think Christmas Day, and then it was on streaming on Christmas Day, and then arrived here a couple of weeks later. This is the latest film in the car crash
DC
Extended Universe. Directed by Patrick Jenkins, it's the sequel to 2017.
Very well received.
Very well received and very good. Wonder Woman starring Gal Gadot and Chris Pine. And we've been waiting for this for quite some time. I think it was due out last year. They were put back and put back again. There were reshoots and various issues. And it finally arrived. And I think it proves once again that DC films keep making one step forward and three steps back.
Funny steps back with
this
one.
You get a good film and then...
You've had Wonder Woman. Aquaman is quite enjoyable.
Shazam was okay.
Shazam was quite fun.
I know you're a supporter of Batman, Superman, and Justice League, but I still find them pretty
unbearable. I'm not blind enough to say they're good films, but I did enjoy them to an extent.
This, though, is a major step back, and I can't begin to imagine what
this is a step back in the vision that Wonder Woman herself had thrown it with her mighty strength. And sent it all the way into the outer rim territory of space.
Or more likely is, the problem is that Patty Jenkins co-wrote the script, and I think that's possibly something that she shouldn't have done, because she's a good director. I think, I will say, it looks good. I think it looks as if it's been well-directed and well-made. The production values on the screen, but unfortunately the script lets it down horrifically, I would say.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you can say it looks good, and it looks like it is set in the 80s, but Stranger Things did that. Well, and that's a lot, you know, a TV show.
Well, the trouble is, it looks like it was set in the 80s, but they don't really make much of that.
No.
She had a few jokes about costumes.
Yeah.
It sort of doesn't matter, it's the 1980s. Just to set the scene of what it's about, we're now in the 1980s. Diana Prince is working for the Smithsonian Institute, looking after lots of old artifacts. And she's still pining, get it?
Yeah.
For Chris Trevor, who died in World War One at the end of the first film. And she's just living this sort of eternal existence, occasionally fighting crime as Wonder Woman. Although, interestingly, nobody's actually called her Wonder Woman in any of the films she's been in. That name has not been used.
No.
Which is nuts to me. The film then sort of deviates after a couple of things introducing her into this new character, Barbara.
Barbara Streisand.
More interesting character. Christine Wiig's character, anyway, Barbara, who joins a slightly ditzy, unconfident sort of assistant archaeologist.
If you want to get a character down, just think Batman Returns, Michelle Pfeiffer, Catwoman.
Yeah.
Basically the same character.
Yeah. She's very sort of unsure of herself, socially awkward. Barbara Minerva, of course.
Minerva.
Socially awkward, and she sort of meets Diana Prince and idolises her to be a bit like her. Meanwhile, a villain character called Max Lord, played by
Mandalorian.
Mandalorian himself. certainly making the most of his time on the screen, should we say.
Yeah.
He's this sort of Donald Trump type villain with political aspirations, and all to do with this strange artifact which comes into the possession of the museum, which the plot contrivances eventually give people
the stone grants wishes.
Yeah, it grants
That's
people
it.
Their wishes. And it all sort of escalates from there.
Yeah.
Max Lord wants this thing. He wants to.
He wants to
grant wishes.
Even say it out loud. Yeah. It sounds terrible.
Diana Prince wants to grant wishes. And Barbara wants to grant wishes. And everybody wants to. Grant
Everyone
wishes.
Wants to be a genie.
The only wish nobody actually grants in this film is to get a better script.
Yeah.
That's the problem for me. Is the script is all over the place. If the film is too long. It's 2.5 hours long. You get these two scenes at the beginning, which is quite exciting, with Diana on.
I'm a scare ass
the one.
As a child,
doing this sort of a big games type tournament and learning this little lesson about how you mustn't cheat.
Foreshadow much.
Foreshadow little. Then you get a scene of Wonder Woman in action foiling this dual heist in a mall.
You know what made me laugh about that bit? Right, is this guy says, I'm not going back to prison.
Yeah, so he dangles a kid over,
dangles a kid over the edge.
Yeah, that's going to get you back to prison, mate, if you drop a kid and.
Well done to you, sir.
But then it's full of bizarre, logical, odd things. So anyway, that's quite exciting. You see Wonder Woman thinking about doing what she does.
Terrible and slow then, motion throughout, as usual with DCU.
And then you've got 70 minutes before you see the character that we know as Wonder Woman again. It's all this sort of background stuff.
And it's not even much of Diana Prince either. No, it's primarily
it's about
Barbara.
It's all about Barbara, and then you get Max's character. Max's character, he's tortured. He sort of wants power because he's.
He wants to be successful to a terrible point.
Yeah. But his son just wanders in and out of it.
Yeah.
You only see his son just wandering around his office.
Yeah.
You don't know who his mother is, where he lives. He just suddenly, what is he doing in Max's office?
There's no background to it or anything like that. But like you said, that's the issue. There's nothing in the background to kind of draw you in. And the action isn't even that exciting. You know, there's this midsection where she has this sort of fight with vehicles on a road. And immediately as that starts, she gets out and she runs. And you've got this terrible slow motion shot of her running with awful background where you can see it doesn't fit right in. She's got this weird angled look and it's just shot and taken over. And it just looks worse than Linda Carter's Wonder Woman. It looks worse than that.
Well, even that scene doesn't make any sense because there's these three or four trucks lumbering down this desert road, making a hell of a noise.
Yeah.
There's kids playing football in the road.
She's not getting out of the way.
Well, didn't they hear these things coming?
Yeah.
And they're just playing football, so she has to then save these kids. Oh, stupid.
Surely these kids were like, there's some speeding trucks.
Yeah.
Off the road, come on.
Yeah, what's that noise?
I know when I used to play, did you ever play Kirby? Throwing a ball at the kids, trying to get it bounced back to you.
That Kirby enthusiasm.
It's a game I used to play. You throw in a ball, you had to hit the curb at the angle so it bounced back to you. My dad taught us how to play it. And if I heard a car coming, I step aside, yeah, and they stop the ball. Yeah. And, you know,
these kids don't do that, they carry on playing football. And another scene, which was ridiculous, is where we're going to the most deep thing in a moment, where they're trying to escape on a plane.
Yeah.
How do we escape the radar? I'll make the plane invisible. That's not going to hide you from radar, because the plane is still there. You just can't see it. Radar works by electromagnetic waves bouncing off objects. But it's still there. Making it invisible doesn't mean that they can't detect it.
In making this film, they very clearly forgot that it's a prequel.
Logic.
And I don't think we've seen Wonder Woman fly.
No.
I don't think we've seen Wonder Woman say, "We've got an invisible jet that could help." No. You know, when you think back to Justice League, you've got the Batwing flying in, blowing up stuff. Maybe a jet would have been helpful at that point as well. You know? So I think they very much wanted to make it a standalone film as a sequel to
the
first Wonder Woman.
Obviously, I mean, I see the logic in the fact of doing this as a sequel, but
they have to think of it as a prequel at the same time.
Yeah.
Because it's a DCEU. Yeah. This is where Marvel do so well. They plan, they plot, they make sure that things connect quite well. And I'm sure they've made, you know, they've probably, not that I've ever noticed, but they've probably made one or two mistakes along the line. I know some people have said this shouldn't have happened at this point, blah, blah, blah. But mistakes are going to happen. But this was just one big mistake when it comes to continuity, because it just didn't work in the slightest.
Let's talk about Steve Trevor.
The amazing disappearing Steve Trevor.
Dana's wish is to bring back Steve Trevor, filmmaker, the man of her dreams. So,
unintentionally, point out, she doesn't. She's holding this apparent wishing stone, and she's like, "I wish we could." Almost like a side joke.
But she still does it now. For some reason, Steve Trevor comes back and takes over somebody else's body.
Yeah.
Now later on in the film,
any explanation for that, by the way?
When other people are wishing things later on, they just happen.
Yeah.
You know, people want family members back. They come back. They don't take over other people's bodies. Now then, not only does she and Steve Trevor have no interest or sympathy for the bloke who they've ejected from his body, presumably sent to some sort of void.
They definitely mention him, but there's no person, does he have a family? Does he have friends or loved ones that we've literally ripped him away from?
Just taking him out of existence. She then proceeds to take the piss out of him, or they take the piss out of the 1980s fashion. Then she has sex with a body, which isn't Steve Trevor's body. Now, that's an issue which has come up a lot. I mean, it's not the sort of thing that I, you know, throw my hamburger up in the air about. But you think that if that was done differently, say that a woman had come back into her body and a male hero had had sex with her, it's the same thing. She's effectively having sex without permission with a body, without permission. It's a huge grey moral sort of thing. And you have to think, not sure.
If the roles were reversed.
If the roles were reversed, there would be
uproar.
Furores and uproars.
Yeah.
But the whole issue of that just seemed such a lazy way to bring him back. Having killed him off, why kill him off if you want to bring him back again? They obviously thought we'd have to bring him back. So don't kill him off. Don't jump through these hoops to bring him back. And then when he goes again, when it all goes tits up at the end, he just sort of goes around the corner.
He just fades away. He
just walks around the corner.
She literally says, "I'm going to have to give you up. I've got to give up my wish." And he's like, "Yeah, just do it." And she walks away. Nothing. He just disappears behind a pillar.
He literally goes behind a pillar. And
it's gone.
And then, meanwhile, Barbara, her wish is to be like Diana Prince.
So she becomes a cat.
It's Cheetah.
She is one of the biggest
Wonder Woman villains.
But she, bearing in mind that she looks up to Diana and wants to be like, well, why does she become evil? Why does she suddenly want to... All the character motivations are all over the place. Then Max Lord becomes this nutcase. A megalomaniac. The last act is just pretty much nonsense, really.
And as much as I love Pedro Pascal in The Mandalorian, I thought he was great in Game of Thrones in this, possibly due to scripting. He was more irritating to look at.
I think he's performing in a very pantomime sort of fashion. Right. Pantomime bad guy, because that's the way he's written. You know, this megalomaniac who wants power. And I understand the Donald Trump
talk. I'm sick of people doing it, though.
Well, it's done now. We see, so hopefully we're not going to see much more of that sort of thing. But it just, there was no subtlety. And I just watched this thing thinking, please, when is this going to end? Because this, I made the end.
And how did it end? In a spectacular CGI fight, and then her sitting down in the corner trying to appeal to the goodwill of the bad guy.
Yeah. Great. It was this dark CGI fight. can't remember why she had that sort of golden sort of phoenix costume.
It was the I can't remember the character's name now, but it's who Linda Carter was playing.
Oh, right.
In the secret end credit scenes, she was like the protector of the greatest warrior. Yeah, something like that. And somehow Wonder Woman got around to that. I can't remember how, but
I just watched this and I was so disappointed because I'd heard on the rumor mill it wasn't very good.
But then we heard that about the first one.
Yeah.
You
know? Well, I don't know, the first one had quite good press. I quite enjoyed it. But I'd heard in advance that this wasn't very good. And I, having thought about it since I saw it, I think you probably hated it more than I did. I was very disappointed because I want these characters to be good.
I think that's why I hated it more, because how disappointed I was after the success and enjoyment I got out of the first one.
Yeah.
You know, this is the first character in the DCU that really hit it off.
Yeah.
I thought, well, they can't ruin this now.
Yeah.
You know, they've gone up with Aquaman, Ben Shazam. Yeah. You know, those three films have done quite well. So this is Wonder Woman, you know, she started the rise of the DCEU.
Well, it was the sign of the support here. And then you think that, unfortunately, the same creative people, I think it was co-written by Patty Jenkins and Jeff Johns, who I think has done a lot of comic stuff. Perhaps Patty Jenkins shouldn't be involved in the writing. I imagine that she had her fingers in lots of scripts.
After the success, you know what studios are like. After success, they go, "What do you need? Well, we think you the reason why it's popular."
They pass all the power over. And of course, this is what happens.
You get a mess, and it was a mess, unfortunately.
Very disappointing. I think I was prepared to be disappointed, but not as disappointed as I was. This huge 70-minute gap. There's no Wonder Woman, no action at all.
Well,
when you do get action scenes, they're not really very good.
Barbara does occasionally kick a drunk every now and then.
But there was a bizarre bit there where Barbara gets attacked by this bloke. And then later on, when she's got her powers, she gets attacked by the same bloke. Purely by coincidence, the same bloke.
It does the same coincidence thing as well at the end when Anna Prince is looking at the guy that Steve Jarrett took over randomly walks past.
Yeah.
You're in a big fucking city.
Yeah.
Stop making coincidence for coincidence's sake happen.
It's almost as if they realise, well, that's a bit dodgy, the bloke. It'll show that he was all right.
He was okay. I would have preferred a side shot.
Yeah.
Not that it actually needs that, because she smiles at him and you think, something might happen here.
Yeah.
It won't, because it won't be a third one.
Yeah.
But it's just, I don't know.
It's just just disappointing.
It's massively disappointing. I was gutted after finishing it.
The problem is that Marvel do this stuff so well. They've just fumbled the ball because they want what Marvel have got, but they don't want to put the legwork in to do it properly, so they just put any old two stuff.
I had to laugh because I spoke to my cousin the other day, or Ellie's cousin, but my cousin, I'm married to Ellie. So. And she said, I was just watching the trailer for Wonder Woman. I went, And she said,
just leave it there.
She said, is it not very good? I said, well, watch it. Don't take my word as gossip because you might enjoy it yourself. I said, give it a watch. But I was very disappointed compared to the first one. So I said, well, watch it because you'll have your own opinion. I don't want to taint it by saying, this happens, that happens, that happens. You can watch it. But, I wasn't impressed at all. So, out of 10?
I'm going to give it a generous 4.
That's a generous 4. I'm going to give it a 2.
Yeah.
Because I was that disappointed with it. It's not as bad as Venom. not by much. Because it was just a mess of a film, and I'm really gutted about that.
It's a shame because I like Superman and Batman, and I do like all that. I prefer the Marvel characters because I prefer the humanity of them. But I think there's so much potential in these characters, and it's such frustrating to see it wasted like this.
Well, we haven't had a decent Batman film since Tim Burton's run.
We haven't had a decent Batman film since 1960.
Tim Burton's two were pretty good with Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
You know,
but if I want to watch Batman, I'm going to watch Adam West.
Adam West.
I'm sorry.
Adam West.
But have you seen that there's a trailer for this new one, isn't there? And it's getting more the same. Batman isn't that violent. He doesn't.
It irritates me. There's the bit where he's like, I'm not going to kill him. And he beats the shit out of him. What?
The bloke's down. He keeps on hitting him. That's not what Batman is. I'm
not bothered by that. No,
I don't know. It's.
But maybe that's what Batman is these days, and it's just not.
Well, certainly
but as much as it's not your Batman, it's now not my Batman.
No.
You know, the 90s were my Batman. You know, the Michael Keaton, the animated series and stuff. Yeah. My Batman.
Yeah.
It's not that Batman anymore. You know,
I understand these characters.
I've said Batman a lot now, so it's kind of losing a lot of meaning.
Batman. Yeah, no, these characters do evolve, and different creators want to do a different thing with them. But I just think that Batman, I understand he's the Dark Knight and he's the Bat and all this stuff. But
we need to revert back to fun
like,
Batman.
A bit of like shame.
Yeah.
Because why would you want to be that miserable a character all the time? You know, you don't have to be Batman because life is so miserable. Just be a Batman.
If you're going to do a serious one, obviously the 60s won't work. Well, you know, in this day and age. But why not like take a leaf out of that? You know, make it a bit more, you know, anything, not camp, because it just doesn't work that way anymore. You know, you can't release Flash Gordon for people to like it. So, you know, not as camp as it was back in the 60s, but take a leaf out of it, make it a bit lighthearted. Don't make Bruce Wayne such a, you know, damaged property type character.
Yeah, it just gets boring, you know.
I know he had a hard life growing up and stuff like that, but it doesn't mean he has to be a dick.
No.
You know?
It's just not entertaining spending time with people who are constantly dark and miserable. Yeah. The world is dark and miserable enough. I'm looking for I'm watching The Stand and various other end of the world things, but if you want a superhero, you want them to be super and larger than life. Not, I don't want people to drag me down to an even darker world.
Well, what really irritates me is Robin was created to be a light side. Yeah. You know, a younger Robin was brought in to be a bit of a lighter side to Batman after, you know, he got so dark. And there are some fantastic kid actors out there these days that we could easily bring Robin in. But then what do we get? Teen Titans. Fuck Batman. Yeah. Ah, whatever. You know, come on. Done with it. So and DC, what they need to do is give it a couple of years, have a rethink, have a reshuffle, make a plan, and maybe try again. But, you know, I think what they might need to wait for Marvel to start dying down, which, you know, we'll see what happens with the next phase now, whether the new characters grab on like Iron Man and Captain.
It's an important time for Marvel because their best characters have been up there. They need to move on with the lesser known characters. They've done well with the lesser known characters so far. Always had the back of the others. So it'll be interesting. But that's a whole other issue. Wonder Woman's available on various streaming services now. Why not let us know what you thought of it? We've had a couple of letters referring to it, and we will mention those a bit later on. But let us know what you think. Is it a hit or a miss? Clearly, it was a bit of a miss for us.
Just a bit.
Just a shame. I know that Patty Jenkins is on board to do the next one. There is going to be a third one.
Oh.
Even though it's lost a lot of money, mainly because of the whole cinema shutdown thing. But they seem to have enough confidence to do another, whether they have commissioned her to do another one, just to spite everybody. I don't know. That's Wonder Woman 1984. Have a look. Not a total disaster, but near enough. But just a major disappointment, really. Let's go back to those news items. Nice jingle. First item, let's just talk about this King Kong versus Godzilla trailer, which dropped.
Big monkey fight big lizard.
Yeah, and then let's move on to the next news item. this is coming out to streaming in March, I think. It's going to have a theatrical release, if possible, and a simultaneous screen release on HBO. And this trailer is, again, this is a film that came out, I think, about a year ago. Then it was pushed back to October. Then it was pushed back to the end of the year. Now it's come forward to be released streaming. Digitally.
Like everything else these days.
Yeah. Which is, and apparently it's talking about Black Widow might do the thing.
Wouldn't surprise me. Soul did quite well for Disney, so
yeah,
Black Widow will hopefully do the same.
Yeah.
Soul was a great film. So.
Well, I've seen it now.
Oh,
I watched it this week. I'll talk about that in the back. We had a letter about it. I watched it on Monday because I was knackered on Monday after a busy week. And I watched something that... It was. Kong vs. Godzilla.
I just want a monkey to fight a lizard. And that's the end of it. It shouldn't be more than an hour long, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. You know,
it'll be about 2 hours.
But it's going to be about 2 hours long with a lot of filler, a lot of.
I'm nervous about it because Kong is my first movie monster I watched when I was a kid, and I love King Kong, and I love Kong Skull Island. I thought it was great. And I'm not a big Godzilla fan. I find Godzilla a bit boring. I like the original Godzilla because that was that atomic age sort of parable. But I think that the Hollywood Godzilla films have been, without exception, dull as hell. The 1988 one.
That was awful.
That was just boring. I think the one with Bryan Cranston briefly was boring. King of the Monsters was appalling. going, I'm sorry.
Well, as I said with that one, 20 minutes of good material in there.
A couple of good monster fights, but the trouble is the humour stuff is so bad. Terrible plotting, terrible script, and acting was terrible from some good actors. Charles Dance, Vera Farmiga, Millie Bobby Brown, terrible in all of it, right the way through. And some of them are back in this film.
That's what I got a feeling of. It's going to be the same, yeah.
So I am not anxious about it, because if it's shit, there we are. But
it won't be a surprise if it's shit, because we've had one good film, Kong Skull Island, and two bad films.
I want it to be good, because I do like Kong, and as I say, I've got all these emotional connections to Kong when I watched it.
Thing is, the trailer looks like Pacific Rim without robots.
Yeah.
That's what it looks. A lot of water fight scenes.
Water fights. People, gazing at computer screens. You're going, we need Godzilla.
So let's do a film where people stare at stuff. That's already been done. It was Godzilla. Oh, okay.
The effects look good. Kong looks good. Godzilla looks good. But that only takes you so far.
Yeah.
And I think apparently there's a hint of Mecha Godzilla in there as well, which I didn't
know. Is there?
I've only watched it once or twice. I didn't. Apparently you could see him in there at some point. I suspect they're going to team up against something else.
Well, that's the way it's going to go. It's very much that kind of film where it's like, they'll fight for a while, and then a bigger bad turns up, and it's like, we better unite.
Yeah.
And you're going to have Kong holding back the one while he laser blasts. It's just going to be... There's going to be no surprises in this film.
I just don't want the human side of it to be as bad as it was in the last one. Like I say, you just want the monsters to fight. The human stuff is peripheral. But it has to be vaguely interesting and competent human stuff. Stuff on Kong Skull Island, they weren't greatly drawn characters. It wasn't great stuff. But you're interested in the characters. Yeah. You like the characters. And they weren't talking bollocks. In King of the Monsters, they were just gibberish dialogue, stupid plots.
It feels in this one as well, they're trying to wedge in the matriarch storyline as well. Because the matriarch stuff doesn't exist in Godzilla, really.
Matriarch?
Is it called the Matriarch?
Monarch.
It doesn't exist in
the Godzilla film, really. Create a universe. What's a universe? And that just feels wedged in. Oh, it's that again. It's like Conjuring universe.
The thing is, this feels like it should be the end of this universe.
It should be, really,
yeah. But I'm sure they'll come up with something else.
Well, if it does well, I don't know. So I'm interested to see. I don't expect it to be great. I am expecting it to be better than King of the Monsters, because it couldn't be a lot worse. But I wasn't excited about it. I've seen a lot of people online orgasmic and be excited. It's the most exciting trailer I've seen in years. Haven't you seen any other trailers for any other films?
The thing is, though, trailers can be exciting. But they could show you everything.
Well, the thing is, they cut a trailer to make you feel excited about it, to make you want to see it.
You always know when a movie's bad is when you watch the movie and you think, I've seen all the best bits in the trailer. Great.
Or conversely, well, wasn't that bit in the film? Because they often show bits in trailers that aren't in the film.
They did it with Rogue One. They did a few shots in Rogue One. There's this bit where she's running across to fix a satellite and a TIE fighter comes up to counteract her. And, you think, she's going to get a TIE fighter with a blaster. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
And I can remember watching that show thinking, that's naughty.
Yeah.
That's not in there. Yeah.
It happens quite a lot, though, you see bits and things.
The only one I was okay with was with Marvel. They had the Hulk in the Endgame thing. But that's because they didn't want people to go.
Yeah.
It was Hulk.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen the Hulk, because that whole section was a little bit weird for me.
Yeah.
Where the Hulk wouldn't come out. I was like, well, just get the Hulk out.
Well, they even do it on television, because Doctor Who did it in the last series, where they had a trailer for the series. Where they go to Lenny Henry's party and they're all dressed up in dinner suits and things. In the trailer, Sacha Dhawan, who plays the Master, isn't there. They obviously took him out of it, but he's actually in the program because they obviously didn't want to give away to people there was another character.
A new character, then everybody be probing, who is this character?
What's he doing?
That's Kong versus Godzilla.
She's out in March. I
think the only thing we can say with that is we shall see.
Time will be the judge when we see it, I think, end of March.
That's about the Doctor Who Blu-ray.
Doctor Who Blu-ray collection continues at pace. We've got Season 8, which is John Pertwee's second season, which is coming out now at the beginning of March. It was due out to end of February, but they put it back. They always go back a couple of weeks. And now we've got the most challenging season yet, for me personally. It's Sylvester McCoy's first season. And I always said, I'm not having this. I'm not interested. I don't want that. It is... I know Sylvester McCoy is quite divisive. Some of the old school fans like me are a bit Some of the younger fans, if you like, they got into Doctor Who at the end and they really rate him. And I can I can understand that because I read up more about that year, and now I know the problems they had. BBC weren't interested in the script editor trying to change the show. You, looking at his certainly a second and third series, you can see the attempts to make it better. First season, however, is a mess. Four pretty terrible serials. Only the last one is any good. That's not great. There's a trailer which has come up, which might be worth having a look at later on. It's got Bonnie Langford and Merle's companion in the future, running a Dragon's Den type thing.
Right.
It's got people coming in trying to sell a new business deal. And at the end, there's one bloke who's cloaked. And so who are you then? And he gets spoons out. He starts playing spoons.
Hmm?
Then he takes it in. And it's Sylvester McCoy, his doctor costume.
That's cool.
And he's come to pick her up with some.
Yeah.
But he still looks the part. He goes off from Mel to have some adventures again. It's quite nice. And that's a trailer for this series, which I have no interest in. I don't like the episode. Nice extra things. It's got like an hour long.
You've got all the other ones.
And it's got behind the scenes, all these documentaries, which I really like. So, I have no interest in the series. Worst Doctor Who series ever. I've pre-ordered it.
You're a collector, though, aren't you?
Well, the thing is, I just thought, I've got the Trial of the Time Lord series, which is rubbish. I've got Sylvester McCoy's third series, which isn't one of my favourites. And I think, well, I suppose if this is the ultimate presentation of Doctor Who on physical media, it would be stupid and churlish not to have this series.
And if you remember, support physical media.
Support physical media. I know, they are great sets. I mean, they're not made in high definition, but honestly, you look at them, these were made in HD. They really are labours of love, and all these extra features are so good. So, yeah, I've got it in order.
Of course you have.
I don't know when it's coming out yet. It's probably going to be, well, the next one's out in March. That's the John Pertwee one. It might be May or June, but I've got them pre-order.
Good old Pertwee.
If you're a collector, then.
He's my favourite.
He's probably my favourite as well. But I think, yeah, I think the collectors, and I am a collector, and it'll be just nice eventually, if I live that long, to have all Doctor Who on Blu-ray. These nice boxes. They just look lovely. They're nicely put together, nicely presented. So,
and they go in a nice row, don't
in
they?
In a nice row, you know, the spines are in the form.
I like it when they do that with DVDs, books and stuff. They make a nice image out of the
There's
design.
Nothing worse than when you change the design halfway through or something. Yeah. Things don't line up.
Well, they did that with the Scott Dougherty Pleasant books.
Yeah.
Halfway through, well, I say halfway through, I think by the seventh book, the art style had changed. I was like, but it doesn't look right on my shelf now.
You've ruined my shelf.
Before we go into our main bulk of TV reviews, Paul, what is this Game of Thrones animation that you have precariously put at the end of the
news? Yeah, it's just something that came up on one of my news feeds recently. Meetings with writers are underway for a potential series that would be part of the Game of Thrones expansion at Warner Media. Basically saying an animated Game of Thrones drama is in the early stages of development at HBO Max. That's really all I can tell you. It's part of a strategy. Again, they want to create this Game of Thrones
GOTEU.
Got you. So I don't know what it is, whether it would be a prequel thing. We've got this thing, House of the Dragon, prequel series is coming up.
That would probably be about the Mad King and Daenerys.
It stars Olivia Cook, Emma Darcy and Matt Smith. That's production in a couple of months' time, I think. So there's
they've got a lot of work to do to recover after the last series. Very upsetting ending.
There's also another series, The Tales of Duncan Egg.
Wham! Over my head.
Yeah, apparently they're characters who...
Duncan Egg over my head.
I think they're in something to do with the Game of Thrones stories. There's George R. R. Martin's written two or three novellas based on these characters in the Game of Thrones universe. And so HBO, obviously, this is their golden goose. I really love Game of Thrones. Off the lot of teams.
Yeah.
And they're going to milk it.
Well, the thing is, at least those ones were written by Martin, who, you know, that's when the show started going off the rails, is when they went on their own way, because Martin's taking forever to write something.
And he still knows. Speaking of expanded university things, also plans for a Harry Potter TV series. Obviously, we've got Harry Potter films,
it's the success of Mandalorian that's probably started this.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, in the process, could be a good segue here, the success of WandaVision currently on the go.
So, yeah, lots of stuff going on. It's interesting that even though we're still in the pandemic, stuff in the pipeline, so I don't think we're going to be short of content.
Well, especially 2 weeks after WandaVision, we're getting Falcon Winter Soldier, that's really, really good.
So, on that bombshell, let's do a TV review. WandaVision.
WandaVision.
With spoilers, if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
We're recording this on the 29th of January, so we've just seen, literally hot off the presses,
just
episode it. 4 of this 9-episode series.
Thank you, Disney Plus.
Thank you, Disney. Thank you in so many ways. Yeah. Thank you so much. This is the story of Scarlet Witch, Wanda, played by Elizabeth Olsen, and Vision, Paul Bettany, who appear to be living in a sitcom.
A 50s sitcom.
Starts off as a 50s sitcom, the first week, four episodes. The first three, very much based on classic American sitcom formats. The first is a sort of I Love Lucy 50s type format. Well, then, the boss is coming for dinner.
Yeah.
The second one is set in the 60s, which is sort of a bewitched thing.
Yeah.
And the third one is very much a 1970s Happy Days type.
It's where colour comes in.
Which is where it all comes into colour. So clever. And what is clever about it is we don't know what's going on in those first three
episodes. Yeah.
We know something of, you know, we know that.
There's hints of a background.
We know the Vision is dead. He died at the end of Avengers Infinity War. And
so how is he back?
How are they living in this fantasy world? And these three episodes are so beautifully reconstructed. I love the title sequences, the little songs.
Yeah, the adverts.
The adverts, the specially created adverts, which have all got...
You feel like you're watching TV in the 50s and 60s.
You feel like watching TV in the 50s and 60s, but with that sort of modern knowingness, because you know that there's more in the background. And I just thought the first three episodes were just fantastic.
But the thing is, it's great down to the point where you get canned laughter.
Yeah.
You know, whenever something funny happens. The first
episode apparently was done in front of a proper live studio audience.
Was it?
Two and three, I think, canned after. But the very first one was a proper live audience.
That must have been fun to do for...
Well, I think the actors said it was a real energy buzz. Because they're probably not used to doing that sort of stuff. But it's so intriguing because we know with a bit of the background of the characters have done. And each episode has little hints of things aren't right, things aren't what you think they are. My first thought, when I saw the trailers a couple of months ago, I thought, well, I wish just created this fantasy world which she can live happily forever after with the person that she loves who has died. Which seems to be
the premise.
More going on. Things are bleeding through. Hints from an outside world are bleeding through. And the fourth episode takes it even further.
Fourth episode was fantastic. It literally wraps the previous three episodes in a package and says, "There you go." That's what just experience.
That's what those were about. This is outside characters in the normal Marvel universe.
Yeah, it's almost like it drags you from the 70s and says, "Now you're here."
Yeah,
yeah. Welcome to the present.
Because I think a lot of people would expect the fourth one to be like an 80s sitcom.
Yeah, but no, they. It was going that way.
Yeah,
but
I think they very wisely stopped at three.
Yeah,
and I thought, well, episode four of 9 episodes, we need to start investigating it a bit now. I bloody love this.
It's very fun to watch. Thoroughly enjoyable. Feels like a top quality Marvel film.
Yeah.
In condensed 20-30 minute pieces. Yeah. Great to see characters that you've watched on the TV come back. New characters that have appeared are really good. I genuinely don't think I can say anything wrong about the show. I've really enjoyed it.
I cannot find it. There's nothing makes me go, yeah, because I'm just loving it. I'm a big Marvel fan anyway.
Mm.
And of all the things that are around, I look forward to things and I think, oh, I'm interested in that. But I'm genuinely excited by the Marvel Universe and what they're doing, the way they're threading it. And Kevin Feige is a genius for creating this interlacing world that everything fits. Like in episode four, we've got three quite minor characters from the film series who are back in this story.
They made a return.
And as I said to you earlier before we started recording it, doesn't matter if you don't know who they are.
Because no.
They're introduced as characters. The fact that one of them comes from the Thor films, one comes from Ant-Man, one comes from Captain Marvel, doesn't matter. If you're a big fan, you get a bit more.
Yeah.
If you're just a casual fan, you still get it. And that's very clever to be able to do that in this big universe. And episode four starts off with this fantastic flashback to that being reversed and people coming back to life, which we've had hinted at before. Here we see it in the sort of chaos.
Like in a hospital of all places, which, it's just appearing. And it's great because as Ram is running out, all the people are coming back together and stuff. She's bumping into people. Yeah. It's just wonderfully filmed. There's a lot of connections to the wider Marvel universe now because the first three obviously condense into this little world.
But it's its own world within a world.
I've been saying from the beginning, I think Wanda is the inverted commas bad guy, sort of.
I think that on it. Episode 4 sort of says that.
I think so. So when it started doing it, I thought, I think that's right.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, I thought she was doing it, but I didn't know she was doing it as a baddie.
Yeah.
And that's clearly what they're aiming at. I love all the stuff in the fourth episode about this town, Westview, doesn't exist.
Well, yeah, I like the Wu and Rama talking to the police officer, and she says, oh, what's so strange about it? He said, can you tell me where Westview is? Doesn't exist. It's a big time. I say Westview, yeah, population 3,000 odd. But it's like all the minor characters that are in Westview, in this mm-hmm. town, are fantastic. Because you've got, I can never remember her name, but she's been in Parks and Recreation. She was in The Good Place. Was she in The Good Place?
I know that Emma Caulfield, Lanya in Buffy. And I recognised her. I thought, I know her. And then I suddenly saw her, and of course, it's Anya, Emma Caulfield, who plays in the second episode, you know, when they're doing the pool party. It's all cuts her hand.
Oh, right, yeah.
That's Anya. But she looks a bit older, but it's still recognisably Anya.
The one I'm thinking of is the neighbour, the nosy neighbour.
Oh, yes.
She's in like Step Brothers, yeah. Parks and Rec, and stuff. Yeah. I don't think she was in a good place. I don't know where that came
she
from.
She might be.
But yeah, you know, she's great. I like her. Anything I see, she's, you know, I like her. She's really good in this as well. It's just overall, it's just really, really fun. It's been four episodes, so we've got another five to go. Which is, you know, like I said, it's nice because I think it releases at 8 o'clock in the morning for us on Fridays. Yeah. So you get to wake up, watch that, and then, you know, 2 weeks after that, we'll have The Falcon Winter Soldier. Hopefully we'll have some sign of Black Widow by this point as well. Because that's probably going to be about 9-10 episodes.
It's great to be safe. It comes out on a Friday morning. I woke up this morning very excited.
Mm. But that's like a kid at Christmas.
But that's a whole other thing.
Disgusting.
No, but it's great to think I'm going to get out now around my breakfast and I can watch 35 minutes of Marvel.
Yeah.
It's just great. You know? It just makes me feel like a kid again. And nothing, even all the stuff I love, like Doctor Who and all these things, this excites me more than I know, because I know that it's not going to let me down. Doctor Who sometimes does, but this I feel, yeah, this is really good. And the Marvel stuff, even some of the things I'm not so keen on. Captain Marvel's a bit, but I still enjoy it, and I still like the fact that this is all a big, rolling universe that connects, and I just admire the way they do it. And the fact that they can do something as bold as this, bearing in mind this is the first new Marvel content since Spider-Man Far From Home, with the delays last year with the Black Widow and Eternals, to be, I don't know, as bold and risky as this, something so totally different for this series, and they, to pull it off so brilliantly, I just think it's a masterpiece. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, I think my only issue, I do have a slight issue with it, is about a rewatch of the Marvel run through is going to be even longer now.
You do these run-throughs all the time, don't you?
Yeah, that's true. Max out of 10 for WandaVision?
10.
Well,
yeah, if I could go more than 10, I would give more than 10.
I'll probably give it a 7.
Don't be so
Okay, I'll give it a 10 too. Otherwise, Paul might physically destroy me.
No, well, I'd have to question your credentials and hosting this podcast if you want to give it a 7. I mean, come on, this is as good as TV can be, in my opinion.
I wholeheartedly agree. I think Disney Plus at the moment is killing it.
Well, they've got started to get a lot of good stuff out there.
They've got a lot of negative thing for the Star Wars movies, but when it comes to their Disney Plus original stuff,
I think Star Wars fandom poisons Star Wars. You know,
Star Wars fandom is much like Doctor Who.
A bit like Doctor Who, it's so entitled, so vocal. You just got to. Do you enjoy it? That's going to be good enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Marvel is, I'm just loving it. It's just great. That's WandaVision. WandaVision. It's streaming now on Disney Plus every Friday, 5 more episodes ago, and I dare say we'll be back to talk about it. And to say the exciting thing is that 2 weeks afterwards, we've got Loki, Falcon Winter Soldier. Then when that finishes, we've got Loki. And then I think probably Hawkeye will be ready after that. There's What If, the animated series.
We've got to wait all the way to the end of the year for Star Wars, though.
TV
review.
Another TV review.
Number two.
This is The Stand.
The Stand.
The Stand. Which is
where people stand out all day.
They do actually stand about quite a lot. This is the latest adaptation of Stephen King's apocalyptic doorstop book, which I tried to read many years ago. But I'm not a huge fan of Stephen King's writing. The book came out in 1978. There was a previous miniseries which came out in, God, when would it be, in the 90s, I guess. But this is an 8 or 9 episode limited series. 1994, the previous series. This is on CBS All Access, which I believe is going to be changing its name to Paramount Central tomorrow. And it's a, It's 8 or 9 episodes. It's Stephen King's apocalyptic vision of the world decimated by plague, and the survivors are then caught up in an elemental struggle between good and evil, the devil and God and the devil, I suppose. The fate of mankind rests on the frail shoulders of Mother Abigail, played by Whoopi Goldberg, and a handful of survivors. And the worst nightmares are embodied by a man with a lethal smile and unspeakable powers, the nefarious Dark Man Randall Flagg, played by Alexander Skarsgård. Good cast in this. James Marsden plays one of the lead characters, Stu Redman. Owen Teague is the slightly creepy Harold Lauder. Johnny Depp's best friend, Amber Heard, as Nadine Cross. Greg Kinnear. We've seen 4 episodes. It's on Stars over here.
Stars plays.
I've seen 4, you've seen 5. You've seen the latest episode, which has just come out. You've seen them before me. What do you think of this so far?
Very interesting show. Normally, I don't enjoy the religious aspect of shows. Religion, I have no interest in.
Godless heathen.
I am a godless heathen. There is, massively religious. 99% of the world population has been abolished by this virus. So,
called Captain Trips or something. It's quite a nasty sort of flu-like disease. It makes people's necks inflate.
Basically, phlegm and bile builds up in their neck and they suffocate on it. It's quite grotesque. But, these random people get contacted by Willie Goldberg, who is like a prophet, but they also get contacted by this wolf-type figure, which is like the devil, and that's pretty much it. And it is quite interesting. It kind of goes into a little bit of a it's like a dystopian sort of world. It's
very much Survivors.
Yeah,
that sort of. I love that sort of stuff. I love the sort of end of the worldy things.
My only concern is I'm not sure where they're going to go with it, because a lot of these shows, the first couple of seasons, take Walking Dead for example. They spend ages looking for a safe haven until they find Alexandria. Whereas this, they've already got their safe haven.
Well, they were directed to go to Boulder. That's where
Whoopi Goldberg was like, come to me.
Whoopi Goldberg in people's dreams tells them to come to her.
So, of course, indeed they do, and they go. But then you've got this other side of the demon, who is this devil who's created. So, like, do you remember the Mario Bros. Film? Where they go into King Koopa's world and it's all sort of electric cars and
try not to.
It's very much like that's all I kept thinking about when it was there. So it kind of put me off it a little bit because I thought, God, that was a bad film. You've got that. So it's all about gambling, drugs, illegal stuff, fightings and killings and stuff. It's like, you could do whatever you want. It's a very interesting story and it is keeping me so gripped. I am looking forward to watching the next one and the next one and the next one. But the religious aspect does put me off a bit. Yeah. Not enough for me to go, I don't want to watch the show just because it's religion.
I think that it's not. It's a very straightforward religion. It's like good versus evil.
Yeah, which is why it's not the praise of the Lord, hail,
It's not coming down on one side or the other. It's basically saying it's good and evil.
Yeah.
Good and devil sort of thing.
So it's not shy about showing a bit of graphic murdering and like that. It's quite
brutal in places. Mm. I'm not familiar with the book, so I can't comment on how accurate the book is. I would imagine it's deviated a bit from the book was written years ago. And I saw the first episode of the 1994 series, never finished it. But what I like about this, and this is one of the things that people have complained about, because there are lots of flashbacks. It's not a clear narrative.
Well, that's TV shows these days.
But I think this does it quite well, because you get a scene where a bunch of characters are together. You think, well, how did they get together? And then the next episode, it flashes back to how they met. So you've got to be on your toes watching this to keep up with where you are in the timeline, because you're constantly leaping back and forth. and I think it's done quite well.
It's not overpowering, no. Which some they do like an entire episode of the bank, and you're like, oh, I'm getting a bit lost here now. But you know, it's not so bad with this one,
and it does sort of fit together. I think the deeper you get into it, the more it fits together like a jigsaw. You see how these characters all come together. It starts off with this Harold Lauder character, he's sort of obsessed with this young girl, and then your pocket happens, and he sort of joins up with her. Then it goes to other characters. This guy who wants to be a rock star, and he's about to launch his album, and this all happens. And this character is like a prisoner, and all these different stories. Then they jump about.
Yeah.
Then you show how they met certain other people. So you've got to be on your toes to follow it. But it does, and if you're able to do that, it sort of, oh, that bit goes in there. And it, like I say, it's like a jigsaw. You move all the bits around. And I think it's done very well. It's very cleverly. There's lots of really nice sort of set pieces. I love the bit, two or three, where, and it's really nicely done, where it's just after the play. You've got the streets of New York, and there's all these cars, and this guy is with this girl, and goes to chase them through the streets. They have to go into the sewers. And then there's another episode where a couple of characters find this abandoned lorry, and there's a guy in there who's got two women prisoner. There's nice little dramatic action little bit, which are all parts of the flashback.
There's one character for me that is, and the actor that plays him is outshines the rest. Outstanding character is Tom Cullen. I don't know if you've met him in episode 4 yet. He's the guy who
did the dopey one.
He's got a disability of forms, and he constantly said, "My name is Tom." Yeah. I have this, and the actor that plays it, I just think is outstanding. Brad William Henke. I think he's outstanding.
In the episode I've seen, he's just been sent off to go to Los Angeles. And he's just gone off on his bike or whatever it was. So that's going to count.
I think that the actor needs kind of award, because he does that so well. Character.
Yeah.
And when he's one of those characters that you want to love, like, because he's just such a nice guy. Even though he doesn't have his full brain capacity, he's still just a nice bloke. And he obviously meets up with the deaf and blind guy. Do you see him when he was in
the furniture place
that crazed woman, and he pulls her aside, and it's just I love that character. And if anything happens to that character, I won't watch the show. So I sound like a Daryl Dixon fan.
This is what's nice about it, the characters are quite interesting. Ezra Miller apparently in it as well.
I believe he's in the next episode as the trash can man or something like that.
Trash can.
We obviously know him as the Flash movie version.
Did you spot Stephen King?
No.
His face is in it. And I think it's the episode where Tom and the guy, you know, they've been chased out of the film by the girl with the gun.
Yeah.
You know, they go into this sort of bus shelter type place. There's an advert for a retirement home. House of the Dead, an advertisement for Hemmingford Home. They got people around the table. Stephen King is one of the people at the table. He's just photographed on the table at this home that they go to. So he's a little cameo, not him physically, but just a picture of him on the
which is probably what we'll have as Stanley over the next couple of months.
Well, I really enjoyed this. I hope, because it is just a one-off event series, it's not going to be like season 2 of the
Stanley. Yeah.
I hope that when you get to the end of it, it's got a satisfying conclusion. Because there's a lot going on in this. And you've got to have your wits about you to watch it.
We're already halfway through.
You're halfway. Yeah, I'm 4 episodes in. I'll probably watch it tonight. I'm really enjoying it. As I'm not a big Stephen King fan, I find his writing a little bit casual.
I always come whenever someone says I'm not a big Stephen King fan, it always reminds me of a Family Guy skit. He says, "Well, you've given up as much as Stephen King has." And he sat there with the producer, and he goes, "Maybe a story about a killer lamb. This is going to kill everything." And the guy behind the camera says, "You're not even trying." But he's just there holding the lamb, going, "Ah, ah." Because he could turn horror book out like this. No tomorrow. He's like the opposite end of Martin. Yeah. Martin takes about 5 years. He takes about 5 months. Done a book.
But not Stan, highly recommend it. But like I said, you have to work with it and keep up with it. But
there's another one of those shows with flashbacks, but pretty much every bloody show has flashbacks.
I think the flashbacks here, point, the more you see it, then the more it all...
It's easier to follow than The Witcher, let's just say that.
Well, yeah, I gave up on episode 2 of that, obviously. But no, I'm enjoying this. This is on Stars Play in the UK weekly.
Yeah.
Episode 5.
I think every Thursday or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Episode 5 is out. It's probably just come out, so I'll catch up about the weekend. And I'm going to give it 8 out of 10.
I was going to give it 8 out of 10 myself, yeah. Great minds think alike, Paul. Yeah. Two of us can't be wrong.
Well, we can. I'll be frequently on.
Hey, TV review number.
Right, this will take us 30 seconds. that Star Trek Lower Decks.
Star Trek Lower Decks.
Anyway, what's next?
Yeah.
This is a new animated series continuing to bleed dry the Star Trek franchise. Created by Mike McMahon for CBS All Access.
that just emphasizes the sort of frustration that the show is. So what it is an animated series about Star Trek characters and ships, but you're focusing on the lower deck, to the people at the lower end of the ship, people that maintain, running.
Maintenance people.
Yeah. And what concludes is 100-mile-an-hour, shouty, talky, irritating, non-comedic characters and caught in situations which shouty, talky, non-comedic, and when you finish, you just sit there and think, I just watched something that was shouty, talky, and non-comedic.
Yeah. I watched the first episode, and when it was over, I honestly had a headache.
I watched two.
So, like you say, it was just everybody shouting, excitable, screaming over one another to be heard. Stupid storyline about some sort of zombie virus aboard this spaceship.
It's the furthest thing away from it's something called Star Trek. It's the furthest away from Star Trek I can imagine. I haven't been a big fan of Star Trek stuff of recent. Not a fan of Discovery. Not a fan of Picard. And I'm certainly not a fan of this.
No.
Not in the slightest. This is just, Star Trek is about space exploration, diplomacy, and things like that. Star Wars is the shooty stuff. Star Trek is the diplomatic stuff.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of respect for Star Trek because it knows what it is and it sticks to it. This just kind of goes, you know what? Sod all that. Yeah. Let's be Family Guy in Star Trek.
Well, this is like Star Trek on Sunny Delight. it's just mental and not in a good way.
Yeah.
It's not for me. It's supposed to be a comedy series.
It's supposed to be.
I didn't smile, much less laugh.
No. I grimaced.
I just found it irritating. And I suspect that possibly, I'm very much a casual Star Wars fan. The classic series I can watch that. The rest of it, I'm a bit, I quite like the
Next Gen, though.
I never really watched that.
So Next Gen!
No, not really.
God.
It's just, I've always found Star Trek a little bit powerful. Humanity going out. We know better. We've gone.
It's
a bit like the Empire thing, sort of, humanity knows best. Not that that's a problem. I just find it a bit, all these uniformed people. And the aliens with bits of plastic on their heads.
This show, this Lower Decks, I feel bad that Roddenberry's name is on it.
Yeah.
I don't think he would like this at all.
No, I mean, I think they're just sort of jumping on the back of the fact that Star Trek is out there in various incarnations. And they think, it's another Star Trek series. It could well be that people well-versed in Star Trek will pick up on lots of in-jokes.
I picked up on a few mentions or references, the little ones that any casual Star Trek fan would know.
Yeah.
But I feel like that hasn't made any hint of a difference to whatever the hell this show is. And I would not recommend any Star Trek fan to watch it. If you are a Star Trek fan and you have watched it, let us know what you think.
What have we missed? I mean, I watched the one and I was going to watch two. I like to give, especially if I'm going to be reviewing them, I like to give them a fair shot. But honestly, I was just almost in tears last night thinking I was going to watch the second, so I didn't know what to write.
Wow. Couldn't be more dramatic, Dave, could you? I don't want to do it, man. I don't want to.
Screaming on the bed. It was terrible. No, I just couldn't bear the thought of watching another one.
I knew it was going to be bad with the open credits and the ship comes into view and then it gets sucked into a black hole. I thought, oh, Is this the kind of thing you find
funny? That was the funniest thing ever.
Yeah, well, that was my first thought was, oh, is this what you think is going to be funny? Okay. And then there's a load of ones where it gets shot by a bug and then shoots off and stuff like that. And I was like, right, okay, is this where we're going? And then you just get this like arrogant main character who thinks he's, you know, the best. And you've got this female character that is the best, but let him believe he's the best.
There was one line that was supposed to be a joke. I can't remember the line. I remember thinking, and there was almost like a gap as if they expected people to laugh. I don't know what it was. I think it really is this is like a joke that would have been rejected for the first series of Red Dwarf.
Yeah.
It was just painfully, just horrible. Just horrible.
I'm giving it a 1 out of 10.
Can I give it half? Half a 1 out of
10? You can give it half.
I give it 1. I'm not these days the biggest fan of animation anyway. It has to be something really special with a good story. And this, you know, it's just not for me. It's like the Harley Quinn thing. I hated that with a passion. I hate this with a passion. But then I'm sure it's not aimed at me. You know, fans of this stuff will always want another fix of their favourite thing, and this will do. But it's not for me. It's streaming now on Amazon Prime. If you're so minded to have a look at it. But I wouldn't recommend it, but that's not necessary.
Hey, Paul. Letters! It's your letters.
It's your letters. It's your letters. And we mean you.
No, it's your letters.
No, it's your letters.
Your letters.
Your letters.
Your letters.
You can contact us on email, tvzoneplus@mail.com. You can look up for us on Facebook, TVZone Plus Facebook page. Leave a message for us there. You can send us a voice message, which we will play on the show because we have technology. Or you can just send us words. An email.
Which kind of people have? Bigger, better,
stronger. So we've heard it from a couple of our regulars, Mr. Emson and Mr. Berridge. They've contacted us and they said the following.
I'm reading out a Mr. Emson.
Hello, Mr. Emson. You know, I haven't done much of this. Hang on.
Hang
on. I got my sound box back, so I only click blast.
That was depressing. Not the start I was hoping for.
Middle of a pandemic.
Yeah, this episode. Are we on WandaVision?
I needed that. Better than sex, that was.
And everybody listening has currently muted, and they're not going to hear the starting of entrance.
Better than sex the way I do it. Anyway, carry on.
So, John Emson.
When you're reading this, I'm going to read a banana.
Hello there, John Emson, all the way in
New Zealand.
That's what I was going to say. Don't do that. John Emson says, Happy New Year. Hope you're all keeping as well as can be. Not written for a while, but I've been listening and enjoying the last few episodes. Thanks for putting those out. A sterling effort is much appreciated. I can tell you've been missing me, though, so I'm back. It's true. It's very true. With a few idle musings, and can give you your opinions. Not too much death. That's your job. WW84, Wonder Woman. I was expecting a bright, breezy romp. Easy. All the marketing hinted at lots of colourful, fun action. What I got was quite a bit darker. The bad guys were more tortured than villainous, and Wonder Woman herself was wallowing in self-pity. All along, some strange plot choices and a bit light in the action. Stakes, but not entirely without merits. 6 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I personally say that's very generous, but, I started watching The Stand. I read the book many moons ago and found it rather muddled and a bit average. 2 episodes in and the show is the same. The jumping around on the timeline doesn't seem to serve the story. It just seems to be way too break up what would have been a very drawn-out plot. I found that King's characters can be a little one-note when he's lazy, but those single notes are taken to the extreme. This has not been corrected with this adaptation. The villains are oh so villainous and the good guys are oh so virtuous. There's little nuance here, but the effects are very effective and occasionally disturbing, and the acting is fine. Another 6 out of 10. WandaVision is so much more than I expected. The sitcom pastiche works with the MCU. I was a little worried about that. It looks stunning. The acting all around is superb, and the overall sense of mystery is enthralling. Terrific and gripping TV. Quick shift around the internet shows that not everyone shares my enthusiasm, though. He gave it a 2 out of 10.
Fair enough.
I saved the best to last, Soul, the latest Pixar offering on Disney Plus. Absolutely wonderful. It's a story of a musician getting by as a teacher to a bunch of unappreciative kids who finally gets his shot to fulfill his dream, only for it to be snatched away. Everything about this movie is perfect, from the character design, especially the abstract afterlife functionaries voiced by the likes of Richard Ayoade and Graham Norton. Sound design, music, but two things stand out above all else. This has perhaps the best animation and visuals I've ever seen. It's beautiful to look at. The depth, shading, and attention to detail is amazing. The second thing is the script, truly heartwarming and engaging without even a hint of cloying sugariness. I'll be watching this over and over again. 10 out of 10. Ah, stuff the rules. 11 out of 10. Turn it up to 11.
Crazy.
Hate to say it, but with Mandalorian WandaVision now sold, Disney Plus is the streaming service to beat. And I think he's right with that.
That's a lot.
That's me done for now, except to say I'll be filling the coming weeks wallowing in nostalgia, including my Chrissy Prezi of classic 80s TV show Hammer House of Horror on Blu-ray box set on Friday the 13th, 9 movie Blu-ray box set. Add to those the 1930s Universal classic monster movies just added to YouTube. So good health to you both and all five of the other listeners, and please keep up the good work. Here's to a brighter future. John Anderson, as always, absolutely wonderful hearing from you. Thank you very much.
Just Johnny. Go Johnny. Go Johnny. Go Johnny. Yes, as I mentioned, thanks for that, John. Thank you very much. I watched Soul last week. It was Monday morning. I'd been working most of the week before and I was knackered. And I just wanted to watch something not undemanding, but something nice and colourful and upbeat. And that really hit the spot. I really enjoyed it. Great. One of the best Pixar's I've seen in a very long
time. Definitely comes into his own when the cat, you know.
Oh, yeah. That was sort of classic Disney sort of slapstick comedy stuff. And I loved that. That was all really funny. And it was, it was nice. It was heartwarming. And, yeah, I would watch it again because there was so much in it. It was just what I wanted on Monday. Let's say I was just zoned out. And
apart from Electro, Jamie Foxx is doing much wrong with it. He's a good actor. So.
Mr. Emerson, however, did send another email. I won't go through it all because he's talking about a film which we haven't watched yet. Back again. Seems like 5 minutes since my last email. Last night, I watched Outside the Wire, a new sci-fi action thriller on Netflix. This stars Anthony Mackie. And I'm compelled to tell you about it. Set in 2036, where robots have an increasing presence in the military, it's about an Air Force drone pilot who, as a disciplinary measure, is reassigned to a unit on the ground at the front line to get a taste of what war is really like. When he arrives, he finds his commanding officer, who has no other subordinates, is actually a top-secret android, played by the ever-likable and seemingly everywhere Anthony Mackie. Did I tell you about Anthony Mackie feeding me crisps?
I did.
Okay.
You did.
I probably said it.
Good sentence.
That's right. That's right. It's an out-and-out... That's right, it's an odd couple buddy movie, or so it starts out. The movie has more ambition than that. It looks fantastic. The actors are on good form. It boasts a terrific action scene. Thoroughly entertaining action movie, 8 out of 10. So that's one on Netflix. Have a look at Outside the Wire. After I saw that email, I thought I'll have a look at that, but I didn't get around to it. Put that on your list of stuff to watch, and perhaps we'll review it the next episode. Shall we? Meanwhile, we also had a letter from Mr. Berridge.
Mr. James. Mr. Berridge.
Hello, James.
Hello, James. Always nice to hear from you, James.
Hi, James. Hope you're all still alive. Yep, I'm alive. If not, then I'm not at all sure it matters, as I'm now more or less convinced we are living in a computer simulation written by a delinquent teenager from a far superior race as a science experiment set by his teacher on how not to evolve a sentient species. You may be right. But we're here, so let's make the most of it. WandaVision.
WandaVision.
WandaVision. The most divisive Marvel property to date. Only two episodes aired at the time of writing, but it has lots of people talking both for and against. Too early for a spoiler-filled review, but personally I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm cautiously optimistic as long as it keeps revealing a little more each episode, as I'm sure it will. I think it has. It was a wise move by Disney to release the first two episodes together.
I agree. Yeah.
If the first episode had aired on its own, I think it would be much more negatively
received. There would be a heck of a lot more,
Oh, I don't like this. You know, people got short attention spans. I watched 10 seconds of this. It was shit. It had very subtle nods to a wider storyline, but it was the second episode that really got you thinking. I appreciate the sitcom vibe that it aspires to, and I'm sure it hits home for some people. I'm on the fence with it. The second episode's humour was much better than the first, especially the drunken talent contest. I thought it was really good.
All because of talent.
I was going to mention that, actually, because I think that appreciation of those first three episodes is improved if you're familiar with those sitcoms that it's parody. How familiar were you with that sort of stuff?
Not so much the 50s, but 60s, you know, I've seen things like Bewitched and stuff like that, you know, not that terrible Will Ferrell movie, you know, the other previous stuff. That was the compliment of Will Ferrell, and especially the opening credits felt very Bewitched and they're flying around and stuff. 70s, obviously, seeing a bit more of that kind of stuff. So, I got appreciated for that. And, I sat through and watched all of the Doctor Who thing, classic, so you know that I'm not opposed to watching it.
And though I know a couple of friends of mine have said they're finding it hard to get grips with because they don't understand those. They've not seen anything like that before, so they don't know what the parody is and what the references are. And I'm thinking a bit, what were kids who like the Avengers and Black Panther make of this?
Interesting. It's
really interesting to see how kids will take to it. Anyway, James goes on to say, in other news, I've been fighting my way through Sweet Home. I'm on episode 5 now. Honestly, I'm not sure I can carry on. I like the monsters, but this is so slow. Yeah, it is.
It is.
I'm on episode 6. I've got a couple more. Probably will.
It does only get slower, unfortunately. The monsters become less and less.
I think the last one I saw, they're outside and something was attacking them.
The big beastie with the fire.
I will go back. Discovery Season 3 started out really promising, but faded in the second half of the season, which is what I've heard.
It seems to be a continuous thing now, doesn't it?
Although it looks promising for the fourth outing. That's it for now. Have a nice lockdown. For God's sake, take the red pill.
You know what that means?
No.
The Matrix. Red pill or blue pill? I got your back, James.
I knew that. Oh, my God. So exciting. News just breaking. The Snyder Cut.
Oh, Justice League.
It's got a premiere date on HBO Max.
Yeah, it's going to be one movie, apparently. Like 3.5-4 hours long. That's too short. So that's a section. I'll partake.
18th of March on HBO Max.
I got a feeling I'll be reviewing that alone.
I'll probably have a look at it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, my voice really been hyping. Yeah, a little bit,
I'll watch it. All right, Mickey Mouse, calm down.
So that's coming out.
I shouldn't go as high pitched as Minnie. It could be dignity.
No, I can't do that. Not without causing myself some severe pain. Every 4 hours. Jeez.
4 hours. Okay.
Ooh, anyway. As if
breaking news on the TV Zone Plus podcast. Incredible. Amazing.
Absolutely incredible.
All part of the plan.
Yeah.
What plan?
I don't know. Just throw this bloody thing together, don't we? So anyway, thanks very much for those letters, guys. We'd love to get some more, but I'm not going to heck you. If you want to write to us, please do. If you don't, that's too short.
TVZonePlus@mail.com. Well, you said that didn't feel fine.
That's fine. Do what you want.
How can you get in touch with us, Paul?
TVZonePlus@mail.com. That's our email address. And we're on Facebook, TVZonePlus Facebook page.
Go on. No planning.
Just
incredible.
You want a cup of tea? What's next, Scott?
So, well, now that we've read the letters, it's our fourth TV review of the episode.
Crazy to
me. You lucky so-and-sos.
I would go further and say they're lucky bar stewards, personally.
Do they own bars?
Probably do. Jurassic World. Camp Cretaceous
2.
I feel obliged to say that. Well, the American series streaming on the Netflix channel. We had the first 8 episodes in September of last year. It was quickly renewed for a second series, but I think we all know the way TV works. They made 16 of these mothers. They split it into 2 seasons. And this stars Paul Mikkel Williams, Sean Gambaroni, Khaosa Mohammed, Jenna Ortega, Ryan Potter, and Rainey Rodriguez, 6 teenagers, stranded on Isla Nublar during the events of Jurassic World. and now post the events of Jurassic World, after the island has been abandoned, when they failed to get to the
board
to get off, and now they're trying to find a way of surviving in the second half of the first season.
It's titled season 2.
Yeah, but I call it...
Get over it.
It's 1.5.
Get over it.
I won't be told what to call things. If I want to call this Last of the Summer Wine, then I will. But I won't call it.
So Last of the Summer Wine 2.
Jurassic World Camp Cretaceous.
Last of the Summer Wine, brackets.
Carries on with the first season after the kids trapped, trying to find a way to get off the island and to protect themselves from the dinosaurs. You've seen all of this. In fact, you're halfway through a second watch.
I love it.
I've seen the first four, and it's great. I really enjoy it. It continues the first series.
Yeah.
And it's as good as the first. First half of the season.
You said it.
Damn you said it. I fell into a trap.
I genuinely love this show. When I first heard it was coming out, I thought it was going to be a kiddie.
It is a kiddie.
Yeah, but I was thinking along the lines of, Lego do some of these, normally. I thought it was going to be along that line. Very, very kiddie. Indominus Rex. Yeah, I've seen that. Quite fun, but, very, very kiddie. I thought that's what this was going to be like super childish. But it is for children, granted, it's a cartoon. But it does, it doesn't kind of pull its punches as much as I thought it would. There are people getting eaten and, stuff like that. And it is a real sense of danger. I mean, very typically, with the main six characters, they're going to be fine. It's got that plot armor that the main characters have.
Although the first series, one of the characters did seem to die.
Yeah.
And there were other characters thinking.
But by the end of the third season, he still gives you a say. He's fine.
The audience knows he isn't because we see he survived. But the other characters think he's dead. And that's ramifications in this season, because they do think about him.
Well, it's like they mention his name in the very first episode, and they kind of go, I like the fact that this isn't like a complete time on continuation. This is happening over a few days now. And it's just them stuck on the island, trying to find a way to survive. The Indominus Rex is gone, and they're aware of that, so they're not walking around going, I wonder if the Indominus Rex is out there when these viewers know there's no danger of that. But, you've got the Tyrannosaurus. They keep bringing back all these interesting dinosaurs that you don't tend to see a lot of, which is great. They don't just kind of go, look, it's raptors, which we haven't really seen raptors.
No.
We saw them in the first season because they come across the raptor cage. And you get a couple of hints of blue from the movies, which is always quite nice. You're just running through the hallways and stuff.
I like the tie into the movies, little things. I mean, they go to the Jurassic Park when it's all been after the first film.
What's happened, Jess? It looks like a dino attack.
And they ground and things, so it's very much tied into the live action stuff.
Yeah, well, that's why I like it so much, because the story's really, really good, and the characters are really likable. Yeah. There's no character you just think, I'm sick of this guy now, this season 2, 1.5, whatever Paul wants to call it, introduces a couple of new characters, which are really good. But there's one standout episode for me, which is episode 5, called Brave.
Which is what I'm watching next.
Which is about Ben and how he has survived, because for four episodes you've seen a collection of these five friends who are down one, surviving over a period of days, experiencing different situations. And this one episode then kind of gives you a whole thing of what Ben has been up to. I just think it's so well done. It's really good because Ben is he's like a germaphobe, afraid of everything and anything. So he has to overcome quite a few things. He's got his little pet dinosaur Bumpy and stuff. So it's just really, really good. And as I was rewatching it the second time, because the story was my primary notice for the first one, first watch through. But the second time I was watching the animation, and the character animation is fantastic. And if I'm right, as I was watching the episode yesterday, Brooklyn, she's like a YouTube star type thing, and they've got her down to a T. Yeah. She is the stereotypical YouTube star. In the first season, she's got pink hair dye, but as the episodes have gone on, hair has been receding.
Yeah.
So her real hair color is coming through, and I'm almost certain that's the case. I meant to have a quick look back to see if in the first episode she's got full pink hair rather than, I think that's good attention to detail. Yeah. And even when characters are reacting to things, they just look like they are reacting as they should. Well,
I've been looking at the animation to see how good it is, and it is superb. The character stuff, the expressions on their faces, and the dirt on their clothes, and their skin, it's all immaculate. See them getting dirtier, they add more dirt, more layer, and it's just very, very naturalistic. So you do forget they're animated. Obviously, they've got big eyes.
Yeah.
They don't look real. But they sort of, because they're so well written and well played, you honestly invest in them as real people. And that's, although it's a kid's cartoon, it's obviously for intelligent kids.
It doesn't pander to
kids. It doesn't talk down to kids. Yeah. It treats kids like adults because it deals with issues like grief, because the lead character's father's died, and that was a thing more in the first series. It's how they try to work together to survive. And even the one character, the rich kid, he's mellowed a bit in this series. He appreciates what's around him. There's a couple of scenes which was as awe-inspiring as the Jurassic Park films. I think when they go to the watering
hole,
it's just like, wow. And you see it reflected in him. Even though it's all animated dinosaurs and an animated landscape, it's got that sense of wonder about it.
The thing is, the rich kid, he's actually been to the island loads because his father is like a sort of donations type guy. He's actually got, I like how, because in the first season they say, I've got a condo here. Yeah. My dad's got his own private condo. And they're like, well, why haven't we gone there? Because somebody's not going to mask. How did I know he's going to lock the doors if I fail my mask test? So it's just that reason they didn't get inside this like luxurious condo. Yeah. And they build their own place to live. And so it's just a really good show. It paced very, very well. There's a bit in this next episode that you're about to watch. There's a bit that just reminds me of every single old Western where the cowboys are fighting a dinosaur, or old sort of caveman show where you know when the dinosaur stop motion, it's like that Ben has a bit of a tussle with the dinosaur. And I just think, it looks, it reminds me of those old style stop motion fights.
Watching the end of episode 4, in the 4th episode, the kids meet up with these eco-tourists. Wow. And they've obviously got some sort of sinister thing. And at the end of the episode, Ben reappears.
Yeah.
And he's like a sort of Tarzan type. So I'm thinking, obviously.
It's like a Rambo type. He's got a band in his hair. The next episode is how
before
he gets
he said
to that.
I thought the next episode was always going to tell us how he became that, how he's gone from the germaphobe into this survivalist type.
Yeah. What's nice is he hasn't completely changed. He's definitely improved in his personality because he's been out there for days.
Yeah.
You know, although the show is a couple of episodes as it goes along, it does reference a lot that it's been days. So he's been out there for as long as the other five have been together surviving. He's been on his own with his little pet Bumpy, who's adorable.
The only thing that made me go, was when they built this luxury sort of tree house.
Well, they had all the materials there.
I know, but all of a sudden she's drawing it, and all of a sudden it's there. How long has passed exactly? Because
it's like a long time after, because they're aiming to try and contact the mainland to get saved.
Well, they sent a signal, didn't they?
Well, that first episode with the T-Rex nest thing was great. I love that, trying to get there.
And I like all the stuff about when they go to the encampment where all the herbivores are caged up.
Yeah.
And they release the herbivores, but then there's we released them as well.
Do we
let them out? Mm. We can't leave them to starve to death. You've got to let them out.
It's like a moral dilemma, isn't it?
I think it's good that it presents kids with those sort of things to think about. It's got this colours and lots of shouting. There's actually thinking about
I've been craving
responsibility
for some decent dinosaur content, and this is surprisingly
I was watching it last night, I was thinking, if you think the original Jurassic Park was like 12 minutes of dinosaur footage. And this has got dinosaurs all over the place.
Yeah.
With animation that's as good as they do in the films. Presumably it's the same animation program. Now it's so much easier to do and they can do so much more.
The thing is, that's the issue, obviously, when we look at Jurassic World and we see the CGI dinosaurs in Jurassic World, you know they don't exist in that world. Yeah. But because the humans look and shaded the same as the dinosaurs, you know they all exist together. That danger is almost heightened, and I just thoroughly enjoy that.
Even though you know the kids aren't going to die, there's still peril. They're being chased by
there's character deaths.
Just genuine sense of danger. People have died in it.
One of the rangers when the Indominus first escapes. Yeah. There's this an episode called Happy Birthday, Eddie, and. He's a scientist with a birthday cake, and he's panicking, and he gets eaten. So,
it's not graphic. You don't see blood and guts and stuff.
No, you hear someone screaming, and they're always behind a bush or something.
But I think kids, that's what kids like about dinosaurs. The whole idea of people being torn apart by dinosaurs.
Yeah.
You don't show it, but you can suggest that it happens.
It's a show that's designed for kids, but treats kids with decency and enough for an adult to be able to watch and enjoy a show with dinosaurs in it. I know a lot of people have kind of faded off from the second Jurassic World film. Lost Kingdom, what's it called?
Which one? The second one.
The second one with the house. Lost Kingdom. I still enjoy it. I watched it recently and I still thoroughly enjoy it. You know, even with the page change in the middle. I've been craving for more dinosaur content. I'd like it to be away from the Jurassic Park sort of Michael Crichton story.
Well, I'm interested to see what they do with the last one. Obviously, Isla Nublar has been destroyed. And when I'm watching this, I think, yeah, this is all well and good, but we know that a few months after this whole thing, the island blows up. Yeah, it's a shame you've got all these stories about these dinosaurs living in harmony, but they're all going to die. In a few months.
Well, that's you've got to look at it from the kids' point of view. I mean, you know, they just say, like, well, as far as they're concerned, these dinosaurs are going to live forever with occasional.
But no, they're all going to run in lava in a few months. Sorry, kids.
Yeah. Maybe they were still on the island. Maybe that's how it ends. They all get burnt alive. They might all just get burnt alive.
I wish they hadn't destroyed the island because that's the symbol of goes right back to the origin. And I don't have no problem the story moving away from the island, but destroying the island completely.
It might not be completely.
Let's have the city from its roots, if you like. And I think
they could go back in a couple of millennia after it's all been agriculturally fixed.
Isla Sorna.
You've got there's five islands there: the Cinco Martes Islands,
Isla Dino.
I know them because I've played the Jurassic World video game where you build your own park on each of these islands.
But are the games canon in the films? Or the islands be mentioned in the films? Because if they haven't...
They have. They were mentioned in Lost World as Las Cinco Martes. In the films, there's no dinosaur building on the other islands. Yeah. But there are the other islands there.
They reckon that the next one is going to finish off this trilogy, but it leaves the door open for another trilogy. So we'll
20 years down the line.
Jurassic Park World, whatever.
Jurassic World, Cretaceous gets a massive thumbs up.
Is streaming now on Netflix along with the first half of the season. It is not a second season. Come on. Get real, get the program. I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
Okay.
The third, I think that along WandaVision, Camp Cretaceous, Cobra Kai, and The Mandalorian. They're right up there in my list.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that.
Right, I think they're my top four things.
It's been a very strong 12-month period for talent. Really, really good, challenging stuff. I'm also enjoying the new series of Pennyworth. I think I might have mentioned it last time.
I need to go back
time.
To that, actually. Yeah.
I think there's only four episodes because they made it, started making it, then COVID. Stopped because of COVID. But for some reason, they released the four episodes they've done, and now they're going back to finish it off. That's like a split season, and it's a shame. It's not quite as action-packed as the first series, but it's beautifully done, sort of era reconstruction. Pillow of Faith is just astonishing. It's so evil, exactly. So malevolent.
Twisted.
And yeah. You don't know what she's going to do next. It's terrific performance. So I'm catching up with that at the moment, and we'll probably review that at some stage when we see more of it. That's Jurassic World, which is still going strong.
Yeah, still going strong. And get and watch it.
Yeah.
Tell us of how old you are.
Don't forget to tell us what you think of it by contacting us. The way you can contact us. One more thing to do before we wrap up for this episode is a quick obituary for Mira Furlan, actress who passed away quite recently. Babylon 5 fan. I don't think you've seen Babylon 5.
I know of it.
Croatian actress who's known playing the Minbari ambassador Delen in all five seasons of Babylon 5, which was the classic sort of people with bits of bone on their heads. It's a great series, and I would imagine it's quite dated now. I think the first series is coming out on Blu-ray, so I might have a look at what it looks like. But she passed away on the 20th of January. She also appeared in Lost, who played Daniel Russo in Lost.
Daniel LaRusso? Okay.
Daniel Russo. Born in 1955 in Zagreb in Yugoslavia, became obsessed with rock and roll, came to America, became an actress, and as I say, was best known as Delenn, who was, I believe, love interest of the commander of the Babylon 5 spaceship, who was played by Bruce Boxleitner. Not an incredibly well-known actress, but of course, fans of the genre will certainly remember her from Babylon 5, and as I say, she passed away last week. We salute her.
Salute.
There we are. Any other business, Scott, for this fabulous episode of The Zone?
Not for me. What about for you?
I have nothing. I got nothing, mate.
What about you, Elaine?
Elaine?
No.
Thanks for that. Elaine, I'd just like to thank you for all your contributions to this episode.
Yeah.
By that,
I did invite her into it. I said, we're talking WandaVision.
By that, I mean sandwiches, crisps and banana.
I'm always here in the background.
You certainly are. Tutting and moaning.
Tap and watch.
And going, come on, we've been doing this for 6 hours now. How long has this episode been, Scott?
Hour and 34 minutes.
Yeah, you had, is that all?
Yeah.
Well, we better carry on and do a bit more.
So let's talk about...
let's talk about me.
I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to read from my new book, which is a Christmas gift from Paul. I Am C-3PO, The Inside Story, Anthony Daniels, quoted by J.J. Abrams. It's sort of like a autobiography of Anthony Daniels' time in Star Wars, which I'm very much looking forward to having a look, because... obviously, Anthony Daniels has appeared in every single Billy Star Wars film that there has been. So, thank you very much for that, Paul.
Quite all right. My pleasure. You don't have to do that.
Then you don't have to do that.
I do. So anyway, if we're done, what else is happening? What else have I been doing?
Been relaxing.
Just be chilling.
Yeah.
I will continue to do so. So anyway,
that's okay for me then.
another couple of minutes. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to contact us, tvzoneplus@mail.com or on our Facebook page.
It's been a pleasure as always, folks.
Hope you've enjoyed the show, because we've had a hell of a time.
Please stay safe. Please stay comfortable. Don't get COVID.
Don't watch The Walking Dead.
That's the wrong button now, isn't it?
Looked like a rifle, but it was a trumpet.
There you go.
Anyway, until next time.
Bye bye.
He's been Scott.
I've been Scott.
And who have I been?
Scott. Paul.
I believe it.
Bye.
You have been listening to TV Zone Plus, hosted by Paul Mount and Scott Holmes. Local. He's a hobby whose partner